The From Day One podcast is brought to you by The Bridge. Visit us at thebridgebk.com.
Hi, I'm Nick Bailey, and this is the From Day One podcast. With us today is Jim Munson, founder and president of Brooklyn Roasting Company. Founded in a loft in Williamsburg in 2009, Brooklyn Roasting Company now inhabits a massive building in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Over 32,000 square foot space once housed the power plant for the entire Navy Yard facility. The company also runs cafes all over the borough, with friendly staff and homey vibes at each unique location. In an industry famous for exploiting workers and land, Munson is known for making sustainability and fair trade practices a high priority throughout the entire coffee making process. Along with providing a great cup of joe, Brooklyn Roasting educates its customers on how each drop gets from the ground into the coffee. Munson had a hand in another staple Brooklyn company, Brooklyn Brewery, where he was a partner and vice president in the 1990s. After Brooklyn Brewery, he was the VP of Dallas Coffee for 7 years, and then he opened Brooklyn Roasting. Jim, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So our office is actually right down the street from your J Street location. We actually go there so much. It's sort of been our auxiliary conference room for the last couple of years.
No, we love that. We remember when you opened. It was great.
That's great. So it sometimes feels like an extension of the office for us. You know, it's a great space. It's also one of the earlier spaces you guys acquired. Is that right?
Yeah, it was the first retail space that we acquired. And we actually opened it originally just to put our roaster in so that we were able to sell to the East River Ferry when the East River Ferry launched their business. And it was in the process of servicing that local account that people would walk by. And it started our retail operation.
Gotcha. Now, that space actually had a coffee history that predated you guys, right?
It was kind of amazing. We moved into the space in 2010, the end of 2010. And about a month after we moved in, we discovered that it had once been the stables for the Arbuckle Brothers Coffee Company, which was the largest coffee importing company in the world at the time. And provided all the coffee west of the Mississippi. So it was part of a large coffee empire based
when,
in
when Denver. Was that? How long ago?
1870s to 1920s. So for 50 years, the Arbuckles Company was probably one, if not the biggest, one of the biggest coffee companies in the world at a time when both quintessentially American brewed beverages, beer and coffee, were really making their mark in Brooklyn.
Gotcha. Now, so when you guys started the company, tell us a little bit about how that happened. What were some of the first things that you guys did when you launched?
Well, I had, as you mentioned earlier, I'd worked in the beer business and become sort of a brewed beverage expert between 1990 and say 2000, and from 2000 to 2008, I worked in the coffee business and learned about many of the biggest issues facing coffee, which were different than beer. Many of them, as you mentioned, were related to sustainability. So when I left, when Dallas Coffee was sold in 2007, I had the idea in my head to open sort of a more Brooklyn Brewery-like, newfangled entrepreneurial business based in coffee that focused on sustainability and, I guess, on a more personal note, a business that I could be proud of and that my daughters would say, Daddy opened a good business. So I wanted it to be focused on superb and sustainably sourced coffees.
There was a lot of parallels with Brooklyn Brewery, right? I mean, you guys started like as home brewers a little bit and sort of just, you know, started working on the process and the product first. Is that right?
Yeah. When Tom Potter and Steve Hindy opened the brewery, yeah, they were home brewers on, I think, 8th Street in Park Slope. And they had the dream of reviving, as I always said when I was in the beer business, reviving the once rich brewing tradition in Brooklyn. And I would say that to a large extent, that same idea was true when I opened the Brooklyn Roasting Company. There are a lot of storied old New York coffee companies, among them Arbuckles and Chockful of Nuts and Greenwich Mills and many other coffee companies based in New York, but nothing, Dallas Coffee, Cobricks, local New York companies, but nothing that had been opened recently that had as its goal to be a strong wholesale manufacturing and retail company.
You want to walk us through a little bit? Now, coffee is one of the more complex flavors. They, it's up there with what, like wine and chocolate and coffee are always considered these like incredibly complicated, complex food items that have a lot more depth to them. I think a lot of people drink, I mean, almost everybody drinks coffee, certainly in this city. But most people don't really understand how it's made. Can you help us understand?
Sure. It's a very popular beverage, more popular than just about anything other than, I would say, water in the United States to drink. People use it. It's psychoactive. People use it to wake up in the morning, just like they use beer to relax at night. Coffee is the seed of a cherry on a tropical evergreen plant. There are two main species of it. Most of the coffee industry is based on the Arabica species. A smaller percentage is based on Robusta, which is included in more mass market blends. So coffee is harvested all around the world in different growing regions and processed at origin, they say, or in the country of production where it's grown, and shipped to roasters who are based in consuming countries all around the world, mostly Asia, Northern Europe, and let's say places like the United States, although increasingly in places like Brazil, where I think coffee consumption is now larger than the United States, making it the single largest coffee market in the world. Roasters take those green seeds that have been processed and dried and milled in origin and put them into really cool, big roasting machines, and according to a combination of art and science, produce the ingredient for brewing coffee. And obviously, when you brew coffee, you take those roasted beans, you grind them up, and you add near boiling water in a variety of formats, whether it's espresso or a French press or a pour over, and you wind up with the delicious beverage we call coffee.
Now, how much of the difference in quality, you know, comes from the beans, like the source of the coffee, and the technique used to make them? Is there really a distinction between the two? Does it require both? Like, how do you guys handle that?
There's what people taste in the cup is a reflection of several things. When I taste coffee with people for the first time, I try to break it down into four key areas. One of them is the roast of the coffee. So that's something specifically related to the last step or one of the last steps, whether it's a light roast or a dark roast. You can taste that in the cup. The second factor would be origin, where it's from. As you mentioned earlier, can you tell whether this is from East Africa, from Indonesia, from Central America, from South America? Is that origin character evident in the cup? The third thing would be age. Can you tell whether or not this is a freshly roasted or a freshly picked bean? And if it's not, you'll pick that up in the cup. Some people call that taste baggy. So it actually tastes like the burlap that it may have been stored in for too long. And the last thing you might taste is strength, the brew ratio. Did they use a lot of coffee, or did the person preparing the cup use a lot of coffee or a little bit of coffee relative to water when they brewed it? So roast, origin, age, and strength.
So let's talk specifics now. You guys are thinking of getting started. You've been working in coffee for, 8 years, I guess you said.
16 altogether.
16 altogether.
Counting Dallas Coffee.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. When you're starting the company, you have some history in it, but obviously, what were some of the things you wanted to do different or better than you'd been doing before? Talk a little bit about the business model too.
Definitely.
You guys have a hybrid of, you have some of the better coffee shops in Brooklyn, which is an achievement. But you guys really are, I think primarily a wholesaler, probably as a business, right? How did you balance all those things together in your business plan?
That's a good question. We started out with an ambitious plan in mind. We wanted to be both three things in mind: a manufacturer supporting a wholesale and a retail operation. Throughout the company's history, we've actually been about 50-50. About half of our sales relate to retail, the retail operations, not including the retail operations that we conduct under license in Japan. We have three shops in Japan and now a roastery in Japan. That about equal with our wholesale business. We have a couple hundred wholesale accounts in New York City. In terms of what makes the business different or what the original idea was, I would say that in addition to the idea of focusing on sustainability and sourcing coffees that taste great and sort of do good, as we say, that we also, or I had hoped when I started the business, to sort of undercut what I felt was a kind of snobby, pretentious character of the specialty coffee, or what I would call the third wave coffee movement, and replace that with something that felt more in line with the character of Brooklyn. Sort of sturdy, robust, straightforward, and not snotty. We always tell people coffee's, just add water. The definition of something simple and straightforward is just add water, and that's kind of also the recipe for making coffee.
Gotcha. And how did you build that sustainability aspect in from day one? How do you handle sourcing?
I would say it's a combination of working directly with Fair Trade USA, based in Oakland in terms of paying a certification fee in exchange for being guaranteed an audit trail on the coffees that we purchase. We call that third-party certification. There's some controversy around that, but I feel like it's a really important way to sort of guarantee that we're not buying, for lack of a better comparison, the blood diamonds of the coffee world. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of international minimum fair wage. A combination of that and direct trade, which is probably the more popular third wave coffee paradigm, where coffee roasters go directly themselves to origin and strike up deals with coffee farmers. I feel like there's we have kind of a hybrid of the two, but as a baseline, we expect that 80 or 90% of our coffee will be fair trade certified. And from there, we purchase coffees which we deem, based on our internal cupping and quality control, to be truly outstanding, exemplary coffees within, you know, from a particular origin.
Gotcha. There's really like a noticeable vibe at Brooklyn Roasting locations. Of course, I'm very familiar with the one on J Street, but there's the one over by the Navy Yard and there's a couple others. You guys have like a great staff. There's like a great and personable staff. Is that part of your corporate sort of mission from day one as well, to sort of build in a certain culture?
I think we've been blessed with, fortunately, one of the great things about being the Brooklyn Roasting Company is we're based in Brooklyn, and there are a lot of great people in Brooklyn right now. So our pool of applicants and employees based in and around Brooklyn and New York City can be excellent. And I'm glad to hear that you say our staff is great. That's good feedback. We do try to cultivate a fun environment, both for our employees and in terms of our sort of operational standards and for our customers. So the design of the spaces should be comfortable. I feel like there is in addition to sort of our not snotty, non-pretentious approach to making coffee, I ask all of our baristas, for instance, to make sure that they can make coffee without using a gram scale or some of the more technical equipment. Do they have a recipe in mind? Do they actually understand the flavors of coffee? Could they make a cup 100 years ago without, you know, fancy espresso machines and digital scales? And that's an example of the beginning of making a more approachable cup. For our customers in the design of the cafes, we're specifically not trying to design cold, angular spaces. We sometimes put in couches and we have fun with color. And it's not just all about blacks and browns and hard edges. We think coffee is a beverage that people should be comfortable with.
Sure. How about for you? Was this project, is this your first experience as an actual entrepreneur?
It's my first experience starting a company myself and owning it. I would say that my first experience as an entrepreneur, actually, I shouldn't say that. I have a funny story. My real first entrepreneurial experience was working with Tom and Steve at the Brooklyn Brewery. My experience there was invaluable. I can credit much of my sort of mindset and approach to business based on my time there. Although, you know, that was an outstanding experience.
How early in the process did you start?
I was the, I think, fourth or fifth employee, the first driver, full-time driver in Manhattan, worked as sales manager, operations manager, general manager, and vice president. So I sort of worked my way up in the business until we had maybe 100, 120 people, and then left in 2001.
It was pretty soon after college for you, right? Like you were pretty young?
I just moved to New York. Spent some time in Boston at the Harvard Radcliffe Publishing course and thinking that I was going to move to New York and go into publishing. And after a 2-month stint at Aperture Photography Magazine on the foot of Madison Avenue, I met Tom and Steve at a street fair in Park Slope, and they were peddling their beer. And through another fellow at the company, I started delivering it for not a great salary back then, but I saw an opportunity and some great people to work with, so I had a lot of fun.
And by the time you left, what kind of stuff were you working on? What was your job like?
Oh gosh, the business had grown tremendously at that point, and I was running a wholesale staff. It was all wholesale. We didn't have any bars, so there was no retail aspect of the business. That's something that's been new to me in the coffee.
You didn't even have the the brewery tours and stuff like
the
that.
The tasting room was just getting underway. It wasn't really a big part of the business. Now I think they do as Williamsburg has grown a much bigger business, but at the time it was probably 1,000 wholesale accounts in metropolitan New York. a fleet of trucks, and we also had a distribution company, which familiarized me with sort of the ins and outs of not just sort of brewing beer and selling it, but also putting a beverage with lots of water in it that's very heavy on trucks and having guys deliver it day in and day out, starting early in the morning and ending late at night.
It's a unique logistical challenge, the beverage business, right?
Yeah. It's heavy.
Right. And so then tell us a little bit about, you know, was the coffee startup, was it Dahlia Coffee was that a new company that, or was that something?
Dallas Coffee, excuse me. It was owned by David Dallas, and it was actually one of the oldest coffee companies in New York, started in 1913. And I had worked with David Dallas in my capacity as the chairman of the American Institute of Wine and Food in New York. So I had an organization founded by Julia Child and Robert Mondavi, and I was lucky enough to run the New York chapter of that for a couple years, and David was my treasurer. And when the time seemed ripe, he invited me to help him run his company, and that's where I was introduced to coffee.
And were you guys roasters as well? Was it the same kind of business model, sort of?
It was an old family-run, third-generation coffee business, but yes, focused on the very highest end of the market. So at the time, Dallas Coffee, Dallas Brothers Coffee, as we called it then, provided coffee to all of Danny Meyer's restaurants and Steve Hansen's restaurants and some of the more sort of blue-chip wholesale accounts in New York City.
Gotcha. And then when you started your own, you know, when that you said the company was sold and you started thinking about your own version of a coffee company?
I borrowed a lot of what I had learned at Dallas and had the freedom to do things that, you know, I wasn't trapped in, or I shouldn't say trapped, but I wasn't committed to some pre-existing, you know, business architecture. So I was starting a company from scratch. So that gave me sort of the best of both worlds. I could borrow from the experience I'd had running a very old coffee company, but with an eye to modern tastes and sort of contemporary sensibilities.
How did you come across the name Brooklyn? You know, I mean, besides the obvious, what made you think that it was for you?
I guess the obvious. I had worked at the Brooklyn Brewery and felt some kind of ownership of that project, if not the company. And I really loved the idea that Brooklyn had played such a central role in the history of these two great beverages. And I thought that just as beer deserved a brewery named after the borough, that the other great American brewed beverage deserved a company, you know, with a similar name.
We had Steve was in here for the podcast as well. And, you know, he talked about how surprised he was that the term Brooklyn, which he thought of as like, he said he almost had to be he had to talk people into it at the beginning because it had a negative connotation, that it became this sort of global symbol, this global word that means cool and cutting edge and urban. And, you know, have you watched that transformation happen yourself? Was that a surprise to you too?
I suppose it was. I mean, I give Steve and the brewery and Tom all the credit in the world for pioneering the popularity of Brooklyn as a place name brand in locally and in the world. That what he did in particular, and what he and Tom did launching that company and building the brand with some help from folks like me and the other guys I worked with, is remarkable. And it certainly paved the way for us to recognize the potential in the word Brooklyn and many other companies. But I guess given the size of the popularity of coffee, pairing Brooklyn with coffee roasting, I think made a lot of sense.
Did you guys start out in the Navy Yard from the beginning? Was that an early decision that you guys made?
I started out on North 10th in Bedford in Williamsburg in my loft where I lived for 17 years, I guess at the time 10 years. 10 years, eventually 17, but a couple French presses, one espresso machine, and really just bootstrapped it from the beginning. And then we moved to J Street, where we put our first small Loring Kestrel roaster in, half-bag roaster, and we roasted there for 5 years, 4.5 years, at which point we made a commitment to the Navy Yard with all the cool development that's going on there, and took a 20,000 square foot space in the old big brick power plant building and put in our larger Loring Peregrine roaster where we can now roast, you know, lots of coffee.
That's a city-owned facility, is that right?
It's a public-private partnership, and I think there's city and state, the exact ownership structure. It's a complicated arrangement.
What's it like, sort of partnering with a public entity to as part of your sort of business infrastructure?
I would say it's excellent and complicated, and you know, it's one of those things that there's no such thing as a free lunch. There's a lot of benefits from working in the Navy Yard, especially right now. I think we got in at exactly the right moment. But there's probably more red tape than you'd like to have, and sort of, you know, hoops to jump through than if you were just out leasing a space in the middle of Brooklyn.
Do you think there's misconceptions about, you know, Brooklyn as a home for like, I guess, a manufacturing or a physical products industry? I mean, certainly there's been an upswing in those kind of businesses over the past few years. Have you seen that too?
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. There's tons of interest in Brooklyn, and I think Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, the Brooklyn sort of various constituencies have advocated locally and beyond to make sure that the environment for business is better and better. It's not perfect, but I would say that it's pretty good.
So what are some of the things that are next for you guys as a company?
Oh my gosh! I would say that we're focusing on a number of important initiatives. Big part of what we're doing is expanding our sort of reach on the production side of coffee. So working more closely with dedicated coffee farmers.
Do you have staff that's overseas? Do you have people that travel?
We have,
to the coffee manufacturing areas.
We have probably 10 or 12 people who are working in roasting and quality control, and they work in conjunction with people in our staff education, consumer education department. So we're actively trying. One of our biggest initiatives is staff education, consumer education, training. And coffee quality control. So there's just an ongoing, constant concern inside the business to make sure that the coffees that we're roasting are in tip-top form. We check them for on 6 or 7 parameters every couple hours inside our quality control lab, and that's a big area. Also, we want to be introducing a ready-to-drink cold brew, which should be very exciting, two origin flavors. Not flavors, but origins, Sumatra and a Sumatran Ethiopian blend as a ready-to-drink product. There's some other cool stuff, but I'll leave that up for maybe another interview.
Sure. And, you know, last question. On the retail side, you know, you guys have had success creating a retail experience. That's a dream for a lot of people that, you know, for listening to this podcast, a lot of people in Brooklyn, you know, is to open a store, is to create something. What's some of the advice that you give people who are considering it in Brooklyn?
Aside from don't do it, because it's just so much work. No, I shouldn't say that. It's hard. Retail's hard in New York. It's our shops are open 7 to 7, 7 days a week. So that's, I don't know, you do the math. 7 times 12 times 7 times 365 times 9 years. We've put a lot of hours into this. Each one of those hours, we serve hundreds and hundreds of customers, lots of different products. So the volume of retail to be successful in New York City is high. It's hard to make money. It takes a constant dedication to some core business practices. Clearly define your model, I would suggest. Make sure you don't have sprawl. Keep things as simple as possible.
What does sprawl mean? Like focus business purpose?
We're in the coffee business. It's easy in retail to be seduced into deciding, hey, I've got a coffee shop. There's all these people. We should sell 400 products. There's some room for expansion. People that want coffee want donuts and pastries and sometimes lunch and things like that. But you can get carried away. And with every product extension, there's complexity.
Gotcha. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
100%.
You've been listening to From Day One, How Brooklyn Entrepreneurs Got Their Start. This series is made possible by The Bridge, a news site dedicated to reporting on business in Brooklyn. With help from Complex Ventures, a Brooklyn-based digital strategy agency working with more-than-profit companies and organizations. For more from The Bridge, to learn more about today's guest, or to listen to more episodes of From Day One, visit us at thebridgebk.com. That's thebridgebk.com. From Day One is produced by Cora Feeder, Kim Thornton, Steve Kep, and myself, Nick Bailey. Audio editing and post-production by Al Sigmund. Our theme music was performed by Jody Rockwell and the Amblamps. And our founding sponsor was the Made in New York Media Center. Thanks for listening.